You wanted more Pac-12 apostles? Well, you got more Pac-12 apostles. This is a quick bonus episode where we get to the things you guys want to talk about. You guys hit us up on Twitter. Shoot us an email. I'm mad. I-M-M-A-D at unafraidshow.com. We will get to you. And please make sure you leave a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts, not a 4-star, and definitely not a damn 1-star, which we are going to address today from a Utah fan. He's Ralph Amsden. I'm George Reister. You can find us on Twitter under those handles. Follow at Pac-12 Apostles. So, Ralph, where do we start? Where's the beginning today?
Well, I mean, I've been chomping at the bit to talk about this 1-star review because I had to figure one was coming. However, I'm not 100% sure we properly earned that 1-star review from this Utah fan.
So let's give people a little bit of backstory to what happened. So we always encourage you guys to participate in the podcast and, of course, leave 5-star reviews. And we were joking on the last episode about Ralph being excited about a 4-star review. And I was like, nobody wants 4-star. We don't play for 4-star reviews. But then, and we got to talking about Morgan Scaly from Utah.
You got to call him Scaly. That was part of our 1-star
review. Oh, Scaly, Scaly, whatever. He's a dope at this point in time for what he did. But that doesn't mean we should not call the man's name correctly. And he's Utah's defensive coordinator who got caught using the N-word. And so apparently some Utah people don't like that it's being brought out or even voiced an opinion about it. So, Ralph, can you please, for the people, read the 1-star review for us?
Do I have to? It's so long. It's
okay. I mean, okay, just give us the Cliff Notes version.
Well, here's the thing. I wanna before we even get to it, because I know that it's fairly common for people to read it, to read something, then go back and then try to, like, I guess, rebut. I just want to say, like, from the jump, we did not call for this man's job.
Nope.
So, I want that kept in mind, that we did not call for this man's job. And the other thing that I think is really important to remember is Morgan Scaly admitted to it.
Yes, that was the thing he said suspended. In the review.
Right.
He was
right.
Like, how do we know that this even happened?
Yeah.
Fool, he admitted to it.
So I just want to put those two things out there before I read this review from Gorilla Bears with a Z, the title of which was, I can't even fathom how pathetic this episode was. And the episode was more than just about that. But all right, here we go. From Gorilla Bears. I've listened to the podcast for a few months now and have liked it decently so far. The episode that came out today was utter trash, though. I don't think I've listened to a worse podcast episode of my life until today. I usually don't have a problem with creators interjecting a little bit of their personal political beliefs into their content, mostly because if I did, there would be nothing for me to consume. But these two decided to take it to another level. They started talking shit on all the current and former Utah players that were defending Morgan Scaly, not Scaly, and acting like the players were delusional and stupid for defending his character. One of them equated the situation to a little girl that got kidnapped 20 years ago, but her kidnapper took good care of her like she was her real mother, but she still got kidnapped. Are you effing kidding me? Morgan Scaly didn't even come close to doing anything equivalent to kidnapping a child. Everyone already condemns the use of the N-word, but it's never okay for anyone to use it. White, black, brown, blue, purple, etc. Wow. So we know this person's white. But for them to say he should be fired because of one word in a 7-year-old text when they don't even have all the information and facts about what happened is baffling to me. Somehow it didn't cross their minds that this 7-year-old text just so happens to now be coming to the surface coincidentally when racial tension is high. But I'm not surprised that they couldn't put 2 + 2 together based on what I was hearing from them during the show. I think the host is still butthurt about Utah walking into Autzen in 2015 and spanking his poor little duck 62-20. That's the only reason I can think of why he has so much hate for Utah, but it's time for him to let it go already. I already moved on from the ass-whooping we took in the Pac-12 title game from Oregon a few months ago, but again, I'm not surprised they can't move on from shit that happened almost a decade ago. The other dude was saying some stupid shit about there's a thing called grace we need to learn to forgive, but immediately after saying it, he says Morgan Scali needs to be fired. This is unforgivable. Complete mental dysfunction. Again, these two don't have all the information. The person that claims to have the screenshots of the text hasn't posted it, so no one knows if it really exists or even knows what it actually says. I'm not saying a text didn't get sent, because I think it did, but again, wait for the facts to come out before you start spewing nonsense like he said a no-no word. He needs to lose his job. One last thing. If players like Julian Blackman, Terrell Burgess, Marcus Williams, C.O.C. Mariner, Derek Shelby, Nick Ford, and the supposed recruit the text was sent to, Raylon Singleton, guys that have spent years with Scali and countless hours being around him and getting to know him as a person, are all defending the man publicly, saying he is one of the best people they know and is 100% not a racist. Don't you take their word over some random throwaway Twitter account that claims to have screenshots of the text, but still no one has seen anything? It's time to stop being so cringe and wait for all of the information to come out before losing your shit and scene.
Dude, it's a fact. He admitted to it. And again, if you use the N-word, it is a fireable offense. We didn't say that he should necessarily be fired, but it's a fireable offense. And I also specifically said, and I know that I said this correctly because I tweeted it first. And when we were doing the episode, I went back to my tweet. I was like, that there's a lot that can change in a person's heart in 7 years, but you got to prove that there, that you, and I actually used the term epiphanous experience of pure religiosity, that something happened, that there was an impetus for a change in your life. So I am not mad at this one-star review, Ralph, because if people aren't mad when you're being honest and telling the truth and sharing from your personal experience, not based upon conjecture, but upon realness, then yes, you're going to make people upset. So I am more proud of this one-star review than a bunch of five-star reviews, Ralph. That is a five-star review for that episode in my eyes.
The fact that somebody took the time to type this out is pretty incredible. I love getting reviews. I don't care what star level they're for. I think it's funny that people have started giving us 4-star reviews. I listen to so many podcasts a day, George, and I cannot tell you I've ever heard of one that is just repeatedly getting 4-star reviews as almost a joke. And so I'm honored to really feel like we're starting a trend here, a trend that you don't like, but Utah fans have to come to Jesus on some of this stuff, and they have to realize that when they come to Jesus, that he was most likely a man of color, and they have to realize that this is not a white person's issue to deal with. You don't get to say who does and doesn't get to say anything. You just get to listen. And Morgan Scali has an opportunity right now to listen and to potentially change. I don't think it's in anybody's best interest for him to get fired. If he got fired, I would completely understand it. But I don't think it's in anybody's best interest for him to get fired. I believe what I said was, I could see him taking a demotion for a year and essentially having to earn his position back. And prove through whatever means necessary that he's willing to understand the difference in the power balance between being a coach and a player and how much something like that can hurt. And I think that we got Utah fans that are worried about how this might affect them in recruiting. I think we've got Utah fans that are, you know, like our guy that was absolutely melting down on Twitter tweeting the N-word every 15 seconds the other night, that Utah Pig Bus Twitter account of the man of Asian descent who was just using the N-word as often as possible to show that, like, hey, you don't think you've ever used this before? Watch me use it a bunch. That type of stuff shouldn't go on. And that's like a Utah super fan. And it was interesting to see the reaction of Utah fans telling him, like, hey, you can't do this. So they're willing to tell him, like, hey, this isn't helping us. You can't do this. But at the same time, some of them were turning around to say, like, oh, we need more context on the Morgan Scalley thing. There just needs to be kind of a reckoning. And I think that it could be a really, really good thing. I think it provides an opportunity because, you know, we often say stuff like ignorance is no excuse. But at the end of the day, if you want to change hearts and minds have to change. And this is an opportunity for a lot of hearts and minds of Utah fans. And they're definitely not the only fan base that deals with anything of this nature. But this is an opportunity for some learning and some understanding to take place. And I'm not 100% sure that that can take place if Morgan Scalley's just fired and they get to move on from it. The longer that he's around that program, the more people have to look in the mirror and say, all right, what do we need to do differently?
Yeah, and I am a person who always believes that exile is not the answer all the time, that it's an education issue a lot of times. Sometimes showing someone grace can be the thing that causes them to change. Cause you're like, wow, you could have fired me, or you could have done so many bad things to me, but you didn't. It's like the Bible verse that says that, you know, that if your enemy's hungry, feed him. If he's whatever, because it's like lumping hot coals on the top of his head. And there's so much that because when you just exile people, it actually reinforces their beliefs instead of operating from a place of love, which love does mean that you do have consequences. That doesn't mean, and forgiveness does not mean that you're immune from consequences. So if he gets fired, it is what it is. If they keep him, it is what it is. But, you know, I think it should, like we said on the last episode, it should be up to the players a little bit. Next question, Ralph. So we got one from Jedi ASU. He says the University of Houston was quite the false start that a team can learn from. Does this false start put more schools on edge? And also, do you think other conferences would push forward where the Pac-12 holds back? And what he's referring to is the University of Houston had how many players, Ralph? Six or nine?
I think it was six.
Yeah. So they had players test positive for the coronavirus. And mind you, the Pac-12 put all these precautions in place for players returning who can go back and start workouts tomorrow. On Monday. And the University of Houston, when they brought their players back, guess how many players they tested? Not a damn one. They said they were going to wait until see if anybody was symptomatic. I don't know what Dana Holgorsen or Tillman Fertitta is doing around there, but that's a shoddy job, dude. So to answer the question, he said Houston was a false start. Does this false start put more teams on edge? I would say no, because they didn't do any testing. So everybody's like, you buffoon. Like, why wouldn't you do this? So I don't think that puts more teams on edge. I think that Central Florida, I think having 60 players test positive, or Alabama having players test positive, I think that that's what puts schools on edge, because now you're like, hold up. It's actually in our population. So then people who are high risk, whether it's some of our older coaches or people with pre-existing conditions, are now at risk. So I think that that's what puts people on edge, and not Houston because they did something stupid.
What puts me on edge is, like, six out of the last 7 days, Arizona's had over 1,500 cases. And so, like, that's the type of stuff that puts me on edge. California just canceling, making Jay Sarah cancel their road trip to play against Chandler High. or that it could have been a home game in California. I'm not sure, but either way, these interstate games between California teams and Arizona teams at the high school level are getting shut down. That's the kind of stuff that makes me nervous. I think that if programs handle it correctly and they make sure that tests are available and that people are spaced out and they're working out in small groups and everything, that, you know, we can find a way forward, but you're not going to know until you have an opportunity to do it. So, I mean, I say that you deal with the fires and you put them out as they come. And it'll be interesting to see which players, you know, we see NBA players and MLB players all expressing their opinion on what they would be willing to do and not willing to do. And there's all sorts of stuff going on. It'll be interesting to see how much power your random collegiate player has if they decide, you know, if somebody who's a big name decides, I'm not doing voluntary workouts. There's no reason for me to put myself at risk until I have to be in school.
Exactly. There's no reason to do it until there's a reason to do it. But do you think other conferences would push for where the Pac-12 holds back? I would say yes, because I think the Pac-12 specifically with Stanford, Washington, the state of Oregon has already stopped their reopen for 7 days. You have COVID numbers going up in California. Like, I think it was like 3,400 positive cases to today, and then deaths lag behind. So this feels like, hold up, is testing going up and positivity rates? You know, like, that's one thing, but you always have to consider that. But you're like, whoa, people aren't going to be willing to shut down again. So yeah. How bad would it have to get for things to get shut down is the question.
I don't know, man. There's so much peripheral stuff going on all over the country right now. Seattle, Washington has a police-free autonomous zone. You know, is that going to extend to the University of Washington and then all of a sudden we'll be the Pac-11? Is UW going to go independent and shirk all authority? You know, freaking Tucson is on fire. One of my groomsmen is up in the Catalina Mountains trying to contain what is something like a 70,000 acre burn right now. Fort Collins, Colorado had a member of their football team, a Colorado State football team, out in Loveland doing some roofing, held at gunpoint by some old person who's watching so much, I don't know, One America News Network that he thinks that someone wearing a face mask in the age of coronavirus is Antifa. Like, nobody's safe. Nothing is certain. These are absolute crazy times, whether it's natural disaster or disasters of our own doing and of our own making. Things are weird. Things are weird right now. And so I'm starting to believe the schools when they say, hey, it might just be better to get us all under one roof and allow us to get everybody in the same place and take care of them. Because the thing that I worry about the most, and you saw Clemson's players take part in a big, big protest in Clemson, South Carolina today. What my biggest fear is that some of these young guys, you know, get wrapped up in some of the clashes that are going on, and or cost an opportunity or potentially cost a lot more than that. There's a lot to take into consideration, and I'm starting to back the idea that, you know, it might just be good to get all of those young men together and give them the opportunity to be in places where they can focus on the task at hand, you know. That's starting to be my opinion anyway. I think there's guys out there that I've listened to talk about some of this stuff, whether it's Jimmy Lake or Kevin Sumlin. And I think to myself, like, man, these kids would be better off just going to Seattle or going to Tucson and not being put on lockdown, but just given something to focus on. Because I don't want to be reading any headlines that anybody got mixed up in anything or got thrown in jail or worse. You know, I that's the last thing in the world I want to see right now.
Absolutely. Now on to what people said to you. We had, to me. So recruiting is going crazy right now because you have, which we'll cover on the next episode about recruiting, where rankings are and all of these things. But, I've been going down the message board rabbit hole, Ralph, and it's just berserk how fans are always ready to jump off the ledge, on the ledge. But I can tell you overall right now, Pac-12 recruiting is not, aside from USC and Oregon, it's not going well at all, period.
It is not. There are, USC and Oregon are absolutely killing it right now. I think they have a combined 29 commits or something like that. Most of them 16 and 13. Are incredibly talented. USC's actually getting some of the elite California talent to stay home. They've got Jake Garcia and Miller Moss, two of the top 10 players in California, both happen to be quarterbacks, are both currently committed to USC, as well as Maageo Teote, I think I'm saying that right, out of Las Vegas, Nevada. Bishop Gorman, he's a USC commit. And then you just had a huge, huge commit, the number two player in all of California, Troy Franklin, from Menlo Atherton. He just gave his pledge to Oregon. So those two teams are doing really well. Everybody else is struggling. There's no other way for me to put it. Stanford has four commits. Arizona State has five. It looks here like Colorado, at least on the Rivals rankings, Colorado and Arizona are both dead last with three. And one of the big issues there is that a bunch of colleges that struggle to get anybody before signing day have 13, 14, 15 recruits already verbally committed just because of the strange times that we're living in and people wanting to make sure that they secure a spot before everything fills up. So, I mean, Central Michigan has 12, Western Michigan has 13. James Madison is not even an FBS school and they're ranked in the top 100 in the Rivals recruiting, the team recruiting rankings right now, because they have seven commits. James Madison University has seven commits, and that's more than Colorado and Arizona combined. That's terrible. Like, look at Bowling Green has nine. Bowling Green has nine. Northern Illinois has 13. I honestly, outside of UCLA and Washington is doing pretty well. If this was a regular year, you'd look at Washington and saying that they're doing really well. But SMU has 10 commits. Toledo has 15. Toledo.
Yep.
Right now, Toledo is the number 38 ranked team in the country. Wake Forest has 15. So it's crazy to me.
Yeah, but it's only June, Ralph. It's only June. Don't panic. I'm like, yeah, okay.
In this year, it's okay to panic. If you're already panicking, then you just get a panic discount. You just get a panic about other stuff. You just include it in your eternal mental scream that you have going on. It's completely okay to do that.
The next question. Why do Washington fans think they're a blue blood when they've only had two good seasons in the past 20 plus years?
Why do Washington fans think they're a blue blood? Explain to me, like, are we saying that Washington fans put themselves on the level of Alabama, Auburn? What are
not
we saying?
Not Alabama, but okay. Auburn, like that they think that they are a blue
on
blood program. Like
USC and Oregon's level.
Yeah, but no. But Washington fans don't think that Oregon's a blue blood.
But is that the rivalry? Is that the rivalry talking?
They say because they haven't won a national championship, so that doesn't make them a blue blood, even though that they have shared one. I mean, but okay. Truthfully, here's the thing. When you look at Washington, literally since Yes, since 91 when they shared, got voted half of a national championship. They've had four seasons of 10 wins or more. Four. Since 1991, Ralph. Four. Like, it's just hard to be, like, it's hard to add a bunch of 7-6s in there. 8-4, 7-4. It's just one of those things. I look at it and they've missed a lot of bowl games and all that stuff, or haven't won a lot. So it's like, Washington is a program that should be respected because they can be good. They have shown the ability, but I don't see, like when I think of Washington, and I'm a Pac-12 guy, like, I don't put them on the like, if you were equating it, Ralph, to other conferences, who would you say Washington is in, like, the SEC?
In the SEC? They're going to hate this because of the whole copyright lawsuit or whatever, but great fan support, strong teams, put a ton of people in the NFL, but rarely win the conference. They're Texas A&M.
Yep. That is not a bad comparison. That's not a bad comparison at all. Because if you were looking at the history of the conference, Alabama would be, well, USC would be the Alabama of the conference. You know what I mean? Like, so, and I think that that's a good comparison that Texas A&M thing is. And if they were in the ACC, they would be, you know, I guess what Florida State is now. You know what I mean? Like, not what they were, because truthfully, like, they've been better. Like, Florida State's been better. So I just think that Washington is a team who has Jimmy Lake as their head coach now. Chris Peterson helped elevate the program back to that respectable level, because they had just been kind of middling for a while. Yeah. And I do think that they do have a chance to take it to the next level, because they have put a ton of guys in the NFL. But I heard a comparison that people believe that Jimmy Lake could be the what was the Oregon coach before Willie Taggart? Helfrich. Yeah. Mark Helfrich. They're like, is he the Mark Helfrich for Washington? And, you know, and recruiting is not necessarily at the level that they thought it was going to be. You know, I think that, yes, it's still only June, but you don't want to have to scramble for a class. You want it to come together kind of smoothly throughout the year, like USC and Oregon are doing right now.
They're 5-10 in bowl games in the last 21 years, 5-10. So, and Ty Willingham and Keith Gilbertson, they never even made it to a bowl. So here's the thing. Here's where I set the benchmark for Jimmy Lake. It's, are you better than Steve Sarkisian? Because Steve Sarkisian is really who righted the ship. He turned things around there. He got the recruiting going again. He made them respectable, and he was good enough to get the attention of USC. Right. So, but he only went 34-29, but he had to rebuild. Jimmy Lake doesn't have to rebuild. So I guess that's what it comes down to for me is, are you better than, I guess, the later seasons of Steve Sarkisian, him going 7-6, you know, three times in a row and finally breaking the mold and going 8-4, but then they still went 5-4 in conference 4 years in a row. Can he get 6 conference wins? If he can get 6 conference wins, then I think they should feel pretty good in that first season.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. Like, and then and then at least get two of those nine. If you only get six conference wins, and so do you think they beat Michigan or lose to Michigan?
Neither team really has a quarterback in place right now. Honestly, I want to give that one to Michigan.
Okay, so then that only puts them at eight wins. It puts them at 8-4 then.
Yeah, and then if they can get a bowl game, I mean, then that'll be better than Sark ever did.
Yeah, but they weren't happy with the 8-5 this year, though. And the last question is, I don't know why we ended up with some Washington hate on here. But all you Washington fans, make sure that you guys send in yours, because we are no discriminator of person. So if you send it in, even though I'm an Oregon guy, I will address it. If you only beat your rival five times in the past 22 years, can you even brag? By the way, UW is ass.
Brag about what? I mean, I think there's plenty of stuff that Washington can brag about. They brag about that stadium. I mean, they can brag about those Nike uniforms are nice. They can brag about all the NFL.
No. They have Adidas uniforms now.
Oh, they're Adidas now.
Yeah, it's not the move.
Ah, see, when I think of Washington, I think of the...
I do too.
That gold swoosh. Man, I didn't realize that.
Yep.
I love Adidas for some teams. I think Adidas is the right move for a lot. My Wyoming Cowboys just moved to Adidas. I freaking love it. But yeah, that's crazy. When I think of Washington, I think of Nike. I don't know how I let that one slip my mind. There's a lot of stuff that they have to be proud of. And I get the rivalry hate and everything like that. Here's another one. We just got a late breaking question. So I'm pretty happy about this one. It's just, who do you think will be the surprise team, if anybody, this year? And that's from Jennifer Walkup. Which team? Oh, she asked two questions. Right on. The first one is, which Pac-12 team is likely to surprise us, good or bad, this season, and which game is most likely to be the tell game for each Pac-12 team this season? Well, I think the tell game is going to be everybody's biggest out of conference game, if they're even allowed to play out of conference games, because everybody's got, not everyone, but most teams have one, right? That's kind of I think University of Arizona has Texas Tech. I feel like that's about on the level of being able to determine whether or not they're going to be able to be competitive. We got Michigan, we got Alabama. Those are the games to me that are definitely the most important, because the Pac-12 is going to do what it does and beat up on each other. That's definitely going to be the case. And as far as which Pac-12 team is most likely to surprise us, good and bad, I think the bottom could drop out for USC. I think that we're basically depending on Keaton Slovis to be healthy, and he hasn't. You know, he had the elbow thing and the concussion. I think they're wholly dependent on him. That's my opinion. Them being bad would be a surprise. And I would also say that there is a legitimate possibility, if Stanford loosens up a little bit with the number one recruit in the country under center, that we could be surprised by Davis Mills in that offense.
I would say, for me, the biggest surprise could be Stanford. They are that... David Shaw needs to get rid of that antiquated offense. It's not going to work. Intellectual brutality is dead, dude. You got to sling the rock around on some level. You don't have to go air raid, but you do have to have much more balance and not just play conservative run and punt football. Like, that's not going to work. But the other team that I think that could surprise would be, I think that Arizona State and UCLA have huge potential to surprise, because they both, I would say that Arizona State, because they have a good quarterback, especially in Jaden Daniels, like that they have an opportunity to do something fantastic. But if you look at Jaden Daniels' stats, they weren't super impressive, but he's just a winner. So it could also regress in the other way as well. If his stats don't improve dramatically, you could be looking at, you know, you could be looking at, oh man, I thought this kid was so great, but it turns out he's Manny Wilkins 2.0. In terms of non-conference games, for the most important games, I would say Washington and Michigan. That game is huge for the conference and for Michigan. I'm sorry, and for Washington. Like, the conference needs Washington to win that game, and I'm rooting for Washington to win that game. Oregon and Ohio State, even though it would likely be an upset if Oregon wins that game because Ohio State's going to be favored, but still, like, that would be a tremendous win for how people view the conference. And I would also say if USC can hang close with Alabama, like, not get the doors blown off, that even if they lose and it's like a 3-point loss and then USC goes on to have, you know, 10 wins, that would be a huge win.
Yeah. I like it. Good podcast, George.
Yeah. So you guys, this is the quick episode. So you guys leave a 5-star rating, of course, unless you're, I don't know if you're a Washington fan, guess you may be super mad about this, but we're going to keep bringing you guys super good content. You guys keep hitting us up on Twitter at Ralph Amston, at George Reister, or at Pac-12 Apostles. Shoot us an email. I'm mad@unafraidshow.com. Peace out. Catch you guys in a couple days.